Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome again to another edition of Liberty Unbridled. I am your host, Ken Molman, and this is the My View Matters Radio Network. Well, we've got a number of topics to cover tonight, and co-host Dave is not going to be joining us tonight. So if you'd like to call in tonight, the number here is area code 858-683-1326. Again, 858-683-1326. And I'm just now opening up the chat room. Without co-host Dave here, I forgot I have to actually run everything. Sorry. Anyhow, so the chat room's open if you want to join that, and I do check that during the break. We're going to go through the news stories like we usually do here during the first half, and we'll take your calls during the second half. So please feel free to call in, and if you want to speak up on a topic after the break, be sure to press one key when you call in so that I know that you want to actually talk on the show. That is another way to listen. So anyhow, to get started, like we do on every show, we'll start with the political rhetoric generator. This week's randomly generated political rhetoric is, when I'm elected, I'll make sure that Al-Qaeda insurgents and internet pirates cannot corrupt our right to borrow money from Asia. And that's the random political rhetoric generator for the week. I don't know. It sometimes are better than others, but whatever. Anyhow, hemp. Boy, what a great week for hemp. We had our first legal hemp crop that was planted this past week in Kentucky. For the first time in, 80 years? No, not quite 80. Well, maybe it is 80 years. We've planted a legal crop of hemp in the state of Kentucky. At one time, hemp was a very important crop. And in Kentucky, we were one of the main producers of hemp. And so this is a really big deal. It's something that has been championed by people on both the left and the right, the traditional left and right. It's something that has been supported by them. There are some serious, you know, congratulations and thanks that go around to a lot of people, from elected officials to grassroots to people who just made phone calls down to Frankfurt to push our law through, and then our elected officials that were able to get the law pushed through and at the federal level get the feds to allow us to do it. And how great is it that we finally are there? We're there. So a huge congratulations to the many, 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 many people who have worked on this issue for decades. Literally decades. People don't really realize that, you know, there were people working on getting hemp re-legalized for decades. Gatewood Galbraith, who has passed away, was a huge proponent of industrial hemp. And also his cousin, full-blown marijuana, but industrial hemp does have a role to play in Kentucky's economy. How big of a role? We don't know yet. That's something we'll find out over time, I'm sure. And things are looking up for him as, you know, we had the issue here where the DEA basically hijacked our shipment of hemp seeds and tried to put a halt to it. Then they tried to basically blackmail the state into doing X, Y, and Z. Long story short, James Comer, our Secretary of Agriculture, filed suit against the DEA. Because they tried to stop our hemp seeds from being able to be received. And then the DEA did finally back down. There was some deal-making behind the scenes, is my understanding. But the point is, we have the seed. It has been planted. And then as a result of the DEA's actions, the House passed this week a bill with several amendments on it. One proposed by Thomas Massie, who is the 4th District Congressman here in Kentucky, and there were some other ones thrown onto it as well, that basically command the DEA to back off of states who have legal hemp, and actually it also tells them to back off of states with legal medical marijuana programs. And so this is a big deal. The country's attitudes on marijuana in general are changing and moving toward I don't want to say a positive. It's not like everybody's like, yeah, let's go smoke pot, man. That's not what's going on. It's more that we're moving the right direction in that we recognize that punishing people and trying to incarcerate people and trying to stop this is a very costly endeavor, and that it should be left up to the states to decide. It should not be a federal one-size-fits-all policy. That the states can handle their own business. And so the states that have legalized medical marijuana are fully responsible for making sure that works. And states like Kentucky that have legalized hemp in any way, shape, or form get a high. But it shows that we are now able to manage our own affairs. The state of Kentucky, we can grow our own hemp if we want to. And we will. And we are, which is awesome. And this bill basically tells the DEA to back off, to leave us alone. It passed the House. So now, hopefully, it will see the light of day in the Senate. We'll find out. But it was a bipartisan vote in the House, 219 to 189. It was actually pretty close, relatively speaking. I mean, you're talking about a 4% swing there with 435 people and 40 votes, or excuse me, 20 votes, 30 votes, 30 votes. Jeez, boy, math is hard. I'm still in shock today, folks. I was mowing my grass and I was attacked by cicadas. You know those little dirt bags bite? I didn't realize that until I got bit by one. Ow. And yeah, I was being completely swarmed by them. Totally crazy. Anyway, point is that there was 30 people differentiation, so that's I'm going to have to do math very quickly. 7.5% swing, which, you know, whatever. It's kind of a big deal that that passed. And hopefully the Senate will take up the issue. And if the Senate does take it up and does pass it, I hope that the president will sign it, and that will officially make it the state's business to deal with this issue rather than a one-size-fits-all federal policy. And that we want to have states in control of more things and less one-size-fits-all policies that, when you say one-size-fits-all, what it really is one-size-fits-none. So that's a good thing. We're moving the right direction. Something of also interest to Kentucky here, seven counties health department or services, they're not a health department, seven county services provides, as I remember, I'm remembering this, they do mental health services and some other things. Yeah, 12 community mental health centers. They also, I'm trying to read the story real quick. Anyway, the point is they do mental health stuff. And they were suing to get out of the state pension system because the state pension system is in deep, deep trouble. The state legislators increased the amount that folks that are in the pension system that have their people in it have to pay in for each employee as a percentage, because they have to make the pension solvent somehow if they're going to continue to have the pension. Now, I'm not one that thinks the pension system is the best scenario, not by any means, but for the people who have been working for 25 years, they're almost ready to retire. They were promised that they would be given a pension. Most of the people have not abused the system. They're regular people who were making regular money, and they just, have been putting money into the pension system for years and years through their employer, their state agency, or in the case of seven counties here, they are a quasi-gov that was allowed in. And I don't really know why they let the quasi-govs in, but whatever, they did. The point is that because they've raised these things and made it more and more expensive to have employees in the pension, seven counties tried to get out of the pension system, told they were not allowed. And so they sued, and they lost. And so as a result, and Seven Counties said straight up, if we lose, we're going to have to go into bankruptcy because we can't afford to keep doing this. And so that's what's happened now, is that Seven Counties has filed Chapter 11 bankruptcy and is moving forward, and a judge has ruled that they can move forward with Chapter 11 bankruptcy, even though they're supposedly a quasi-gov. They do qualify as a private, nonprofit corporation, not a government agency. And this touches into all kinds of other stuff about those public-private partnerships and all that kind of stuff. But the point is that people are trying to flee the pension system because the pension system's in deep, deep trouble. And, you know, this is another case where if action had been taken 30-some years ago when there was the first recognition that, hey, I don't know if this thing is solvent. I don't know if this thing can last forever the way we've got it structured. They honestly could have fixed it and made it so it was not in such bad a shape anyway. Certainly part of the problem is because the market's been terrible. They lost a bunch of money in the market. But, you know, the market's rebounded. I saw that the employee pension system was 23% funded or something like that. I can't remember. I don't have the numbers in front of me here. But I think it was 20-something percent, which means that they're missing three-quarters of the money they need to be able to pay pensions that they've promised to pay people. You know, another big problem with the pension system today, though, is that a lot of these agencies are hiring people at private sector wages and then trying to give them public sector benefits. And that's a big recipe for disaster as well. You know, the whole point of the pension system was that, hey, you know, we're not going to pay you a whole lot of money while you're working for the state. And you're going to have to work for some wages that are lower than the private sector, 25 or 30 years, depending on what line of work you're in. But the upside is that when you get done, you're going to get a pension. And that was the trade-off, right? I mean, you got paid less than you would in the private sector, but in 30 years, you're going to get better benefits than you would have got in the private sector. Part of the problem is, of course, that we're living longer. And so that causes a big problem for systems like this that give lifetime benefits. But part of it also is that there's been some serious abuse. I don't want to give any specific examples. I know of a few, and I don't want to pick on anybody. But there is a way that basically you can, for 20 years as an elected city council person, make anywhere from, you know, $1,000 to $11,000 or whatever, you know, $1,000, $10,000, whatever it is, a year, and then get appointed or elected or whatever to a position making $100,000 a year for 4 years, 5 years, whatever. And what they do to figure out your pension is it's a percentage of your highest last – or your hot – it's a percentage of the – pay that you receive in the highest paying years that you worked in the system. So if you've paid in for 25 years, if you were making $10,000 a year, and then for 4 years or 5 years, pay in for what you would be making at, say, $120,000 a year. Well, the problem is that there isn't 25 years worth of being paid in at that rate. There's not 25 years worth of money that built up. And so what you end up with is people who are being able to be pensioned on a $100,000-something salary that actually shouldn't be, that they were originally making $10,000 a year or even just $1,000 a year. And that's the thing that's going to have to change. I think that's what's going to have to radically change, is that the formula is going to have to change to make it so it is some sort of average over your entire span and what you've paid in, and then it will be a percentage of that. That's the only way you can really fix that abuse necessarily rampant, but the abuse is so egregious when it occurs that, I mean, think about that. You're basically getting paid for 10 people. If you were making $10,000 a year most of the time, and now you're getting pensioned as if you were getting paid $100,000, you're basically getting 10 pensions. And you can see why that would be a problem, right? I mean, if you're getting 10 pensions, that's kind of a big deal. you know, they've already done things to try to halt the double dipping and the triple dipping and that kind of stuff that was going on, abuses of the formulas. That's the stuff that's going to be required to get the state pension system cleaned up, if there's going to be anything. The other option is, of course, to let the thing die. All right. I wanted to touch on this, and by the way, I see a couple people in the queue already wanting to talk. Remember, I'll pick you up after the bottom of the hour break, and we can talk about whatever you want to talk about at that point, at 858-683-1326. But just hang on. I want to go through, and we do this format now. We go through everything first, and then we talk about it. Let's see. Correlation versus causation. This is something that is near and dear to my heart. Many of you know that I've been deeply involved with the fight against the statewide smoking ban, was deeply involved in the fight against countywide smoking bans in Northern Kentucky. And, you know, it really gets to a broader thing about intentionally skewing and intentionally lying to people, or at least pushing data that specifically talks in your favor and not giving people, intentionally not giving people the full picture. But there's a big difference between causation and correlation. You can correlate a lot of things together. You know, there used to be the thing about how if vampire movies are popular, then Democrats win, and if zombie movies are popular, then Republicans win. There was something about, oh boy, I can't even remember. It had something to do with the NFL. The Super Bowl had to determine the presidency. There was all this different things, right? And obviously, these are not causal things, right? It's not like, oh, well, of course, because zombie movies are popular, the Republicans are going to win. I mean, it was obviously because there were all these zombie movies. That's obviously not how it really works, right? So there's a big difference between that, and that's correlation. Causation is because of X, Y, Z, this will happen, right? That's causation. Causation means that a set of circumstances cause something to occur. And so there's a really big difference between correlation and causation. And there's a really funny thing, and I think we brought this up a few months ago, actually, on the show, about causation versus correlation. And I've just found a few other, and the website is called Spurious Correlations. I found some more correlations here that were entertaining. Suicides by hanging, strangulation, and suffocation nationwide correlates with the number of lawyers in North Carolina. That's a pretty strong correlation. I'm looking at the graph. That's a ridiculous correlation. Obviously, the number of lawyers in North Carolina has nothing to do with nationwide suicide rates by hanging, strangulation, or suffocation. It's just random correlation. Still love this one. I do remember we did talk about this because this is the one I laughed about. The marriage rate in Kentucky correlates with the per capita consumption of whole milk in the U.S. It's like, you know, it is kind of interesting. The marriage rates have gone down. The marriages per 1,000 people. In 2000, there were, about almost 10 marriages per 1,000 people was the marriage rate. And the consumption of whole milk gallons per year was at about just under 8 gallons. And there's a line, you know, and it's a graph down, and it looks like it correlates. Obviously, who gets married in Kentucky has nothing to do with the nationwide per capita consumption of whole milk. But again, it's correlation versus causation. And I really want to emphasize how important that is, because a lot of the things we're being told now, and I'm going to talk about this a little bit more in a bit, but we're being fed a lot of misinformation based off of bad correlation. Science is being abused by many people with political agendas in order to specifically promote their agenda, not to inform the public. Extremely, extremely important to understand and recognize that. We must always ask the question, is this being caused by that, Or is it just some random correlation that seems kind of related, but, you know, was it really causal or not? That's the question. Did X cause Y? Now, speaking of did X cause Y, this gets into, you know, overusing your rights can cause everyone to use them, or it only takes a few idiots to ruin it for everyone else. There were a handful of folks that decided that they need to open carry in fast food places, the right to carry a firearm for personal protection. Absolutely. I 100% agree with that. But please use common sense. Please. Because what ends up happening when you don't use common sense is that places react. And so we're starting to see that a number of fast food and sit-down restaurants are banning patrons from bringing guns into their establishment. Why? Because somebody decided, well, I'm a red-blooded American. I have the right to carry this anywhere. I'm going to show it off and make sure everybody knows I'm carrying a gun. If you try to shove it down people's throats, they take offense to it. You do have the right to carry a firearm. You do have the right to protect yourself. And I support that right 100%. But dang gone it, use some common damn sense. Because the problem is you're ruining it for everybody else. So Chipotle now has banned firearms. Starbucks banned them last year. And now Sonic has banned. I don't really know how you ban firearms at Sonic since you're in your car anyway. But, you know, I think what they're really trying to say is, you know, you don't need to be flashing guns around while you're sitting here at Sonic getting a burger or a hot dog. And, you know, I guess the point is that this all this push, this is all coming from people being nitwits. People that are, like, trying to show off. I just, you got to understand that there's pretty owners or the chains themselves are saying, you know what, we don't want that kind of behavior here. Yeah, it might be legal, but we don't want it here, not on our property. And as a property owner, they have that right to say, listen, you can do that anywhere you want as long as it's not on my property. And that's what they're doing. Chili's now, the restaurant Chili's, is also doing the same thing. So what they're trying at Chili's, they're doing the right thing and basically saying, look, you can carry, but carry concealed. Don't brandish it. Don't cause problems for our staff and our managers. And it makes sense. Use common sense. Protect yourself, but don't be brazen about it. And the reality is, if you're trying to show off you have a firearm, you're actually, in a part, defeating the whole defensive mechanism of carrying anyway. You're making yourself a target. If a bad guy comes in or has bad intent and sees you with a firearm, you're going to be the first one he kills. Seriously. Now, there was a big story about it. You know, as soon as Sonic banned guns, Sonic got robbed that same day. See, that's what caused it. Quite sure that Sonics get robbed all the time, like any other restaurant or business that's open to the public. There are robberies. And the problem with this type of story is that it is reporting to push a political agenda. It's not improving the discourse. It's not logically looking at the problem. Now, does banning firearms, completely banning firearms, make people inherently less safe? Yes, it does. Inherently less safe. Because responsible gun owners do make themselves and those around them safer. The idea that the day the Sonic gun ban was announced that somebody went, oh, well, Sonic banned guns, it's a good thing because, man, I didn't know what I was going to do today. I'm going to go rob a Sonic now. Chances are pretty slim that that's actually what happened. Because the news doesn't really even get out there that fast. Chances are very good that Sonic just happened to get robbed on the same day. Now, I don't want Sonic to get robbed, and I don't want Sonic banning guns either. But you got to be able to recognize when people are using issues for political agendas. You have to recognize when you are when they're trying to use you as a pawn in a greater chess game, negligently be a pawn in someone else's chess game. Now, speaking of information, things that misinformation campaigns, there's a graphic going around on Facebook about, well, San Francisco has the nation's highest minimum wage, and it has the fastest job growth of any other big city over the past 10 years. And that's why minimum wage increases will be good. That's, you know, it sounds, okay, well, that's interesting. That makes you go, huh, really? And then you dig a little deeper. Now, most people don't dig a little deeper. Most people go, see, man, minimum wage is good. Yeah, see, man, see. Dig a little deeper. You find out that the cost of living in San Francisco has also climbed. It's also higher, much higher than the average. It's 161% of the national average. And when you adjust their minimum wage by their cost of living, based on the national average, their actual minimum wage is $6.66. It's actually lower than the national minimum wage. So what's happened by increasing minimum wage is that it has increased the cost of living, and as a result, they are actually getting paid in raw purchasing power. They get paid less than minimum wage. Oops. So the point is that you have to understand that these political agendas are being pushed from the left, from the right, from all these different places. All these different special interest groups are trying to manipulate you to make you a pawn in their chess. Time, it ends up being self-destructive towards your real conversation, the real conversation that could be happening. There was a story here in Salon from a couple weeks ago where the Republicans were pushing that the enrollment rate of the people who enrolled actually paid was 67%. So they claim that 67% of people who enrolled in Obamacare had actually paid their premiums, that a third of the people hadn't even paid. But the new numbers are that you're at 80%, right? Somewhere between 80 and 90%. That's kind of a big deal. It's a big difference. And what that does is it takes away from the legitimacy of the argument. Focus on, people get their eyes taken off the ball, and they end up missing the greater point. And they end up having the rest of the very good points denigrated because they are pushing bad information. So you have to be very careful about even people that are supposedly on your side on an issue, if they're misleading you for political purposes, it can actually do harm to your greater cause as well. And so it's important to know what's going on. And the funny thing is, you don't even need to be lying about it. Obamacare is still unpopular. It has never, ever, ever, the highest point was at 42.6% for it, and 50% opposed on October 28th, 2013. That's according to Real Clear Politics and their daily average. They have a real nice way to average everything out and make it so that the outliers get cleaned up. And so the point is that you've never seen a real high. Oh, I'm sorry. My bad. July 5th, 2010, it hit 43%. The point is you've never seen over 50% support for Obamacare, and you're not going to see it because the law's messed up. It's only I think it's going to get worse through time. But and there are plenty of good statistics out there to use to go after Obamacare. In Gallup's latest poll as of May 29th, so that was yesterday, Gallup's latest poll, 37% of respondents said the law would make healthcare better. 44% said it would make things worse, and 16% thought it didn't make a difference or whatever. That's kind of a big deal, right? So 37% say it's better, 44% say it'll be worse, 16% say it won't make much difference. That 16% is going to slip when insurance costs continue to go up, when care, quality of care goes down. Those 16 are going to flip to the 44%, you're going to end up with 60% against-ish. It's always a margin of error and a little bit of flux. But the point is there's really good information out there. Why skew the conversation? Why intentionally manipulate the conversation to make it goofy or wrong? Just leave it be. All right. Oh, boy, I'm over time. I need to hurry up and get through these, and then we're going to take a quick break, and we'll get to the phone. All right. So I wanted to talk about real quick.
First impressions aren't the most important thing. They're the only thing. At Ernie's Print Shop, we'll produce what you need to represent your company professionally. Right now, you can get 1,000 full-color business cards, 1,000 4x6 postcards, or a 3x5 banner for just $60. You choose. Check us out at erniesprintshop.com. Ernie's Print Shop. Over 50 years, one source, one solution. erniesprintshop.com. 502-969-8585.
Being a victim of crime is no joke, but you do have options that can help you avoid becoming a victim. I'm Ed Springsteen of the My View Matters radio show, and on behalf of myself and co-host Ed Martin, I urge each of you to help us fight against crime. You can do your part by calling Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE. Since 1982, Crime Stoppers has helped get over 23,000 criminals off the street with your help. Working together, we can make a difference to take our streets back. Please call Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE, or you can visit them online at www.582clue.com. Remember, Crime Stoppers always offers up to a $1,000 reward. Get involved and help make a positive change in your neighborhood. Thanks.
Advertisers, here's a great way to reach a quality audience. Get heard on My View Matters and make some noise in the marketplace.
Email myviewmatters@aol.com for advertising opportunities. Make a sound investment.
All right, folks, and we're back. You are listening to Liberty on Pride on the My View Matters Radio Network. Sorry about that. Wow, the power went out here. I lost everything. I hope I got the commercial playing in time before I lost everything. But, wow, big old lightning bolt, and that was the end of that. Anyway, we do have a caller on the line. I have a few more things I want to talk about, but I want to go ahead and bring the caller on now. I believe this is our friend Don. Don, you're on the air.
Yes, and thank you for mentioning the recent victories in our fight against the war on marijuana. I read LRC, in which Gary North writes columns for, and Gary North is very unusual in the sense that he's a not just a Christian fundamentalist, but a Dominionist. But in spite of that kind of a scary label, he does write some very interesting articles. And one thing that he mentioned is that the price of marijuana in Mexico, where the United States gets most of its marijuana, has gone down 75%. What that means is that some of the marijuana growers, i.e. the cartels, are now shifting towards opium. And what that means, of course, is undercutting the price of the opium cartel, i.e. the CIA, Taliban, that has control of about 94% of the world's opium production in Afghanistan. And this might be the reason that the government is so slow to listening to everybody about legalizing marijuana, because a few more states legalize marijuana or whatever, and we could see Mexico completely switching over to being the United States' main opium or heroin supplier. One thing also I've noticed, yeah, you want to comment on that?
Well, I was just going to say, I mean, my worry is that I don't want to
go into conspiracy theories.
Well, it's not necessarily that. What I'm worried about is if we're going into the heroin side of things, you know, that's a whole other mess too.
Oh yeah.
We are seeing that here in Kentucky pretty heavily. But go ahead. I just
thought it was an interesting line of argument, and I've been throwing it out on Facebook. I've also seen him mention, he says that Facebook alone could tear down governments, including the United States. And we can see a tremendous change in the amount of cynicism / anti-governmental attitudes that have become so prevalent in recent years. And so I said, yes, that's delightful. It's gotten so, and this might be just because of my Facebook feed, is that I see very few people defending the drug war, defending politicians, defending the government or whatever, without getting a swarm of libertarians or the Tea Party types, you know, going after them. From I went to the taxpayer rally that Glenn Beck organized in Louisville. There were about 3,300 people there. And, you know, I talked to people. Nobody really had a good word to say about McConnell or Bush. When I went to Bevin's concession speech, the same thing. And a lot of people would not sign Patterson's petitions because people were, shall we say, disenfranchised within the Republican Party if they by signing your petition.
Sure.
And
the one outcome from this election was that all the people who were responsible for disenfranchising people lost. And so that sent a pretty powerful message, though we did suffer losses on the Liberty Front in general in various places. That was one front where we actually had a victim. People who were responsible for pulling shenanigans and disenfranchising their own party members were booted from office. So that was one positive from that.
So they suffered for trying to oppress us.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, that's a good message to send. I mean, that's one of the things I was going to talk about tonight in general was, you know, there's a tremendous amount of pressure now to rally around the candidate, right? Whoever your Republican or Democrat candidate, tremendous amount of pressure coming from the parties to rally around that person. Not because that person's great, but because we have to stop this other person.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of very, very vitriolic conversation coming from people who don't understand why people like myself wouldn't rally behind one of the major party candidates. And, you know, the reality is, I'd say this to everyone, not just because I'm involved with the Libertarian Party, but just in general, candidates should be inspiring people to vote for them, not scaring people into voting against someone else. We should be inspired by a plan. We should be hearing answers, not fear. And I think that that's an important shift that actually is happening. I think that's what you're seeing on Facebook, and what that story was about is that there's more information out there. Now, Facebook, they're starting to filter things and monitor things. And we're seeing that even on my Facebook page show and my political page. You know, we're getting filtered a lot, which is extremely frustrating because it means that certain information is not getting out there. Certain information is being specifically filtered by Facebook. So there will probably be a new mechanism that pops up in light of that, right? That's a market principle that if you're not providing all of what people want, then someone else will. And so I have a strong suspicion it's not going to be Facebook that changes the world. It's going to be what comes after Facebook that changes the world. Whatever it is that could provide the actual raw information and doesn't filter things, it doesn't do it, you know, in a way that it seems extremely politically motivated, we will then see things radically change.
Well, in the last three elections, I've been trying to find, shall we say, establishment Republican or Democratic sites, and I really can't seem to find them, and you know, in which there's actual discussion of things, and they're not anywhere. I think what's going to happen is that McConnell is going to lose, but the Republicans are going to pick up 6, maybe 9 seats in the Senate. Is that your perception as well?
I'm not sure. You know, I haven't looked at all the data yet. I actually need to dig in and see what races look what ways. I think there's still a couple of primaries left out there even. Even though we're usually one of the last, for whatever reason, there's a couple of states that are still out there. You know, and then here in Kentucky, you know, now that we're through the primary, you know, there's a lot of state and local races that are still up for grabs that, you know, and that's what I've been telling folks is, listen, if you don't like a candidate at the top of the ticket, if you don't like McConnell or Grimes, you don't have to sit home. You don't have to sit on your hands.
Right.
If you don't like those folks, if none of the, and there's probably going to be 4 candidates in that race. There's going to be 3 candidates in that race. If you don't like any of those 4, if none of those 4 can inspire you, then so be it. But there's plenty of other races at your state level and local level that are still very important and people that need to have support from liberty activists. And that's where the focus should be. Don't waste your political capital on bad candidates. Find good ones and use it to promote them.
Yeah.
And that's what we need to be doing now.
And from what I understand, Bevin hasn't endorsed McConnell yet.
That's correct. And I don't know if he will or not, and even if he does, it doesn't matter to me. I mean, that's, you know, endorsement.
I mean, it's like Rand's endorsement of McConnell, you know? It doesn't really mean anything.
Right. Whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
go ahead.
Yeah, well, it just looks, I think, good for libertarians within the Republican Party as well as libertarians just running as a party. Of course, some people are saying that the Libertarian Party is now turning into, shall we say, a lifeboat in case, you know, the GOP establishment chases us all away again.
Well, I think that in many ways, that's one of the functions the Libertarian Party has always played. I mean, if you look at the foundation of the party itself, I mean, a big portion of where the party, the Libertarian Party, got its start was the Goldwater supporters that were run out. They were purged from the GOP. Certainly that was, you know, that was one faction of what helped start the Libertarian Party. Now, that wasn't the only thing. There were other circumstances. And, you know, the final straw, as you know, Don, and for the benefit of our listening audience, the final straw was when Nixon took us off the gold standard. That was kind of the last straw that said, okay, we've just got to have a party. And, you know, I guess the point is that you can see us as a lifeboat. You can see the Libertarian Party as whatever you want. I'm not really worried about that per se. I'm more worried about the overall liberty movement and making sure that it continues to move forward. And I can tell you that right now there is a lot of burnout. You know, there's a lot of people who put a lot of time and effort into Bevin's campaign, and those folks are tired, rightfully so. Some of those folks have been fighting since 2007 with the Ron Paul campaign. Some of those folks are relatively new, but still there was a lot of time and energy and effort put into that campaign. And the only words of advice I have for those folks is don't give up. If Route A doesn't work, try Route B. If Route B doesn't work, try Route C. There's always another way to push for liberty, to continue the fight. The worst thing we can do is say, well, I guess we can't win then, and go away and just, you know, disappear into the woodwork. There's plenty of things to do. There's a lot of work left to be done. And I'm telling you, we're reaching a point where more and more people are coming to our side and realizing that the government is not our friend, that the government is not there to help. I've got this story that I wanted to get to before the break. And Donna, if you can let me get to this real quick here.
Okay.
Eight ridiculous laws.
Go ahead. Give me a call this week then, okay, Ken?
Okay. Don, you take
it easy. Get to your show.
Sir. Thank you
okay,
very much
bye.
For your call. Yes, thank you. We have eight ridiculous laws that stop people from helping other people. And this is just amazing to me. You know, I guess it shouldn't surprise me, but it does, because it's so blatantly obvious that the bureaucracy is out of control in this scenario. You've got, let's see, and these are just eight examples that they pulled together here. This is one of those BuzzFeed things. Number one, Arkansas won't let a U.S. Navy person is a licensed dentist and orthodontist. The law prevents her from volunteering her services. Arkansas is one of eight states that ban orthodontists from performing basic dental services like cleaning or removing teeth. It also prevents them from cleaning teeth on the cheap. It's ridiculous. I mean, really? Come on now. That's silly. A guy who went around just giving people money, right? He just wanted to donate money to people for whatever reason. He was giving out silver coins, I guess that's Canadian, CA 50 and $100 bills. Yeah, Nova Scotia. So Canadian, giving out $50 and $100 bills, silver coins, to strangers, just because he wanted to. The police stopped him for a quote-unquote wellness check, and against his will, he was put into a mental hospital. Give away money. Why is that bad? I'm sure the people he gave money to were much happier people that day and treated everyone they met afterwards in a better way. It's one of those infectious viral things when you go out and you treat people nice, you do something nice for somebody, they tend to turn around and treat everybody else they meet at least that day in a much happier way. Number three, Florida's business was fined by the town for its Toys for Tots sign. Toys for Tots is a charity that toys to kids. It's a Marine Corps program. And, you know, it's a charity. And they fined her for having a sign saying it was a donation, a place to donate for that charity. Number four was about donating bone marrow programs that was designed to get more people to donate bone marrow, landed somebody in prison. people die every year because they couldn't find a matching bone marrow donor. And 70% of the people who need a transplant don't have a matching donor in their family. So they came up with a plan to basically, it's illegal, right, to sell organs and that kind of stuff. So a nonprofit tried to do something that would basically reward people in a non-monetary way to encourage people to donate marrow. And basically they got shut down. They claimed that it violated the National Organ Transplant Act and that it could mean up to 5 years in prison. So they sued and they won. It's December 2011. But a proposed new rule would basically bring back the ban again, which is just silly. I mean, I don't want people out, you know, selling their organs for food, right? If they're starving, we don't want to create that kind of society. But good Lord, you know, donating bone marrow, my understanding is that is not a pleasant process. And that it is, my understanding, a painful one. You should probably compensate those folks in some way for the pain. If nothing else, the interruption in their lives to do that. Because it's good to donate if you can. It's good to help other people. Number five, state governments used to discourage interracial adoptions until the 90s. They used to do what they called, quote-unquote, race matching to make sure that people were growing up in the right culture. That's just terrible. I mean, that's a terrible, terrible practice. The Institute for Justice actually helped stop that by suing Texas and Tennessee the mid to late 90s when that practice ended. Number six, and this is one we've seen here in Kentucky, banning of feeding the homeless. This ties into a greater issue of banning food donated in general, specifically prepared food. A Florida couple had been feeding over 100 people a week. You know, they basically go out and feed 100 people one day a week. And apparently they were breaking the law. They were fined $2,000 and threatened with jail for feeding the homeless. Here in Kentucky, we had the terrible tornadoes that tore through here about a year ago or so. And there were people, and that's what people in the country do when you have a tragedy, is you make somebody food. I mean, you do it when something really good happens. You do it when something really bad happens. You know, it's a Southern comfort thing. You bring someone food. Well, the health department turned away the free food and prevented the church that was in the area from distributing prepared food because the health department couldn't determine what was in the food or how it had been prepared or stored or kept. Man, these are people who just lost their houses and everything else. You know, it's so frustrating. And this happened in New York as well. They're banning prepared food meals, donating that because you claim that the city can't assess their salt, fat, and fiber content. Oh, yeah, because homeless folks are worried about their salt, fat, and fiber content. You know, they're not worried about being homeless or starving to death. They're worried about, oh, man, I'm not getting enough fiber in my diet. Number seven, California city threatened to take a gym for at-risk youth to build luxury condos. And this is kind of the silly thing with the whole Kelo, the Kelo decision, which is what got me back into politics. Where cities can, according to the U.S. Supreme Court, a city can come and condemn perfectly good property because they plan to give it to a private developer who will in turn bring more tax revenue into the city. That's been deemed a proper use of eminent domain by the U.S. Supreme Court. It is terrible for property rights. Oh, my God, I hate that. That is what actually literally got me back into politics back in 2005. Number eight here, states won't let out-of-state licensed doctors volunteer at free medical service events. One of the big things that is a problem in healthcare in general is the licensing and keeping everything closed and making sure people have to use a certain provider, that there's all this turf. In Kentucky, they have a certificate of need program. It's ridiculous, absolutely ridiculous that people aren't allowed to donate medical services to people because they're on somebody else's turf. And this healthcare provider's job. Not, you know, you can't give services. Come on, whatever. That's all silly. We're almost out of time here. Let me see here real quick. The way the government makes your beer 44% more expensive than it needs to be. This is because they have laws, both federal and local and state laws, that do things like require the beer be distributed through a distributor. There are other issues with regulations and whatnot that cause additional costs. All this stuff really – they also limit access to beers from out of state. They put all this crazy regulations on things to make it so it's hard to move beer from state to state. For instance, in Kentucky, you cannot get what's the name of that beer now? That's Yingling. That's the name of it here in Kentucky. But you can get it in Ohio. You can get it in Tennessee. You can get it pretty much up and down the East Coast, but you can't get it in Kentucky. And that's primarily because the laws prevent it. Now, in their case, too, their distribution isn't as big. But the point is that if these laws didn't prevent distribution into other states, then there would be more beers available to consumers. And this is just one example. You may not be a beer drinker. I get it. Whatever. But the point is that government regulations increase costs. And for what? What good is it doing? It's not doing any good. It's not like, oh, well, this beer is okay and it's safe to be consumed in Ohio, but not in Kentucky. That's silliness. And then, of course, they had that thing a few weeks ago or a month ago or whatever we reported on that they weren't going to let beer brewers donate their grains to farms anymore, which could be used to recycle and to help with farms, right? And that's another way that those companies make money is selling that as fertilizer. So anyway, folks, we're out of time. I thank you very, very much for tuning in tonight. It went fast. It's been another edition of Liberty Unbridled on the My View Matters Radio Network, and I apologize for the weird break tonight. We had a power outage in the middle of the show. But thanks for tuning in. Tune in again next week, and tune in to the rest of the shows on the network, Monday through Thursday, 7 p.m. Eastern Time. Thanks for tuning in. Have a good week.